Welcome everyone to another coffee session. We have the original gang in place, and today we're just gonna have a fun, relaxed conversation. Why don't you take it away and tell us what we're gonna be discussing today, Demetrios?
I wanted to talk to you guys about tests and how to do tests in MLOps and like this test-driven development and catching things early. How do you all look at that? And then I also wanted to talk about what you all have learned in the last 3 months since we last chatted. So maybe we should start with the test. And Vishnu or David, either one of you want to give it a crack first?
I can go. So tests are really important. And I feel like they're a very simple thing that can easily be missed or maybe deprioritized over doing things that are sexier, right? Because writing tests is really not that fun. It sometimes is very difficult to come up with like a good test. And I think when it comes to testing things within the machine learning space, it becomes a little bit trickier because there's added complexity from maybe you don't have the labels available for what it is that you're... Well, first, let me take a step back and say that, one, it becomes a little bit more complicated because there's various things that you need to test now. You're not just writing unit tests for the software. Maybe you need to write some data quality tests, right? Maybe you need a test that is kind of an integration test of sorts where you actually train a model, but maybe only for a few epochs just to see that it actually is training properly. Or it could be something testing your serving infrastructure. Maybe doing a quick smoke test just to see that your web service gives you a 200 or something like that. Again, there's lots of different areas. And I think another element is that we're not just looking for things that are so obvious. It's not like testing a single function. Oftentimes it's harder to think through, you know, for example, let's say if I want to add a data quality test, more often than not, like the strategy that I've seen being used is we get a sample of the production data and we keep it somewhere where we can easily use that to run our data quality tests. But then you have to keep that sample up to date. And that can be hard when the data is moving fast. And so you end up thinking about, is it even worth doing these sorts of things? You have to run into these sorts of questions around like, okay, we could make the system super, like have a lot of coverage. We could build the system with all the bells and whistles, but it's research though. You have to keep that in mind that a lot of these projects start up as proof of concepts that we need to get into prod as quickly as possible, but we don't know if we're going to keep it there. We don't know if we're going to then worry about automating the training part. We don't know how much work we need to put in so early. And more often than not, you're kind of in a rush to get to production that you make these decisions that often accumulate technical debt. So I think MLOps is about trying to do this quickly in integrating changes, delivering to customers in a way where you're not accumulating all that debt, where you are from the get-go thinking about production, but also doing it in such a way where you're being practical, you're not over-optimizing, you're keeping things simple, and you're iterating on imperfect solutions. You're never going to have it all good from the beginning. And I think that especially is relevant to testing. Start with very simple tests, like things like basic things around, like I just mentioned, is it training properly? Test your functions, test your expected data types, very simple things like that. And of course, when possible, an end-to-end test, things that show you the system working end-to-end. One good practice that I have for that is you have an environment that is sort of your testing environment. It could be an exact replica of your production environment. But it's your playground. It's where you can test changes before you then, let's say, merge those changes into the production environment. I have a lot to say here, but I want to pause there just to say that kind of at a high level, there's lots of parts, as you can kind of see, and there's lots of choices that need to be made early on, later on. And I think when it comes to testing, really what you're trying to accomplish there is get more confidence in your system. I want to know that this is working as expected. And by thinking like that as you're working, you actually are putting good practices into place. Like, for example, you mentioned test-driven development. That's it right there. Start with the test first. Build till we pass, get that test to pass. That works really well for a lot of standard engineering projects. But I think for machine learning, it's not always so straightforward. And that may be more complicated than you need. Again, over-engineering things. And so going back to what I was saying, it's these trade-offs and these kind of design questions that you need to think about. Is it even worth having 100% coverage? What do we really gain out of that? You may have, your time may be better spent working on creating good monitoring and alerting over having a bunch of tests. But yeah, there's a lot that could be said there. Vishnu, why don't you add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll just go back to one thing you said, which is to keep it simple. You know, I think a lot of ML engineers, when they start in the industry, actually have never written tests, unlike software engineers, right? Because many of them are coming from data science backgrounds. Many of them are coming from theoretical or mathematical backgrounds. And so when you get to the industry and you see that, hey, there is an emphasis in production on writing tests, you think, oh, wow, I don't know how to do this. This sounds really hard. But it doesn't have to be hard. It should be kept simple, in fact. It should be kept so simple that anybody who is not you can understand why you wrote that test. And just to kind of, you know, provide a resource that's been very helpful to me, there's the Martin Fowler article on continuous delivery for machine learning, where he kind of walks through what, we read it for MLOps reading group, and he walks through what kind of testing can be used for a production ML system. And, you know, basically there are different tests for data, model, and code. And then there are three types of tests: unit tests, integration tests, and end-to-end tests. And if you can point to one of each for your system, you're probably doing great. And you're already at a baseline. And as you continue to release and iterate, you'll improve that. And so I think I would just emphasize not to let it get too complicated. If you don't know that much about it, focus on simple things, focus on testing the basic things. And I think what David said was really helpful in that regard.
Yeah, the only other thing I would add to that is, as you mentioned, if a data scientist is coming more from a mathematical background or research background, they're not used to that. And so a part of this is actually communicating the value of testing. You know, for me, I often tell like people that I work with, like, it covers my ass, like it protects me in many ways, because as I'm building something out, I'm validating it as I go along, as I build it out. And that provides me with the sense of confidence that I'm making something that is working, at least the components that I have built out thus far. And also it serves as a form of documentation in some ways, right? I often look to the tests first before I look at some of the source code. Because I'm looking, what does this function do? What is it expected to do? And you could see that with a well-written test. And it also shows you what are the important relevance. But it's part of, I think, that learning process to see that it's like good for you. It'll protect you. But I think that also involves educating and onboarding them to what best practices are available there. There's a lot of frameworks that are out there, like, you know, PyTest is a really good one for people learning how to write unit tests or integration tests. That's a great package right there. And there's lots of resources on testing that have been out there in software development. But I guess it's making that accessible and interesting to data scientists who come from more maybe a mathematical background.
That's awesome. Yeah, this is super helpful for me to understand it and to visualize like why it isn't just as straightforward as with software. And I knew it was complicated. I just didn't really understand how complicated. And I like what you're saying, David, about the dance that you have to really be trading off every time. And since it is this research, and since you are just trying to see if something has business value as fast as you can, and you don't know if later on you're going to use that, then do you really want to be trying to put as many tests into it as you possibly can if you're just going to scrap it? And so knowing that you're building that technical debt as you're going through the process is super helpful. So I know that both of you, since we last spoke, got new jobs. And I would love to talk about your new jobs for a bit. Maybe you can give us just a little bit of an update on where you all are at and what you're doing these days. And then talk to me about what you've been learning and what the new jobs have been like throwing on your plate.
Yeah.
You first.
All right. I'll go first. Well, I'm excited to share that I'm actually... I haven't started yet, but I am joining a company called One Hot Labs in New York. It's a healthcare NLP company focused on reducing administrative waste in healthcare by making the process of revenue cycle management and processing insurance claims more efficient. We work with doctors to make sure that their billing codes are correct, that they're accurate, and to make sure that the insurers pay them for what they've done. And so I'll be joining there to work as sort of an MLOps engineer on the infrastructure side. Currently, OneHot is doing more than a million encounters a week in the radiology industry and is expanding into new medical specialties. And so as our number of models increases, as we enter new domains with new sort of encounter data shift, tooling around ensuring new model releases are high quality across those different specialties is really important. And so that's what I'm going to be focusing on. And since we last spoke, what I've really been focusing on has been relaxing. I've taken some time off between jobs, but also kind of just obvious. Having an opportunity.
Yeah, due right. Due to the background, we can see you're just in relaxation
mode. You can really see it. All right, it's the long weekend. Okay, we're really close. But more generally, also just taking an opportunity to think a little bit more big picture about where we're at with machine learning engineering and building ML systems right now. I've been taking some time to think about, two things I'd say. Number one is the overall, what people are calling the new data stack. I think that there's a lot of movement right now towards thinking about what is data engineering, in the software development context and in the business setting, and what does it exist to enable, right? And so you're seeing a lot of new tools that are coming out to basically make data engineering easier and also enable new classes of professionals to access data. Things like DBT, high touch, like there's just so many different companies that are basically Monte Carlo that are adding to the overall data stack and changing the way we think about it. And I think that's really important as we think about the data side of AI. So that's one thing. And the second thing has been thinking about sort of what the modeling process will look like in the future, especially as what are known as foundation models continue to proliferate and increase in popularity. So things like GPT-3, things like, transformer networks, large pre-trained networks that are finding a high level of generalizability are increasingly popular. How will that change, how we do ML engineering in the future is really interesting to think about. So those are a couple of things that have been on my mind lately, other than just TV and vegetating.
How will it change? I really like, especially that last one. Maybe you can go over both if there's any nuggets that you've come across.
Yeah, I mean, I think, from the modeling standpoint, I think that we are going to have better access to baselines faster. I think that's the number one thing that stands out to me. I think what a lot of people have come to embrace over the last year or two, I think, when it comes to production machine learning is get to baseline quickly. And when we have really, really great models at our fingertips that are super accessible because they're APIs, like OpenAI's, Codex or GPT-3 or, any one of the other ones that are out there, Google Cloud, making some of their models just API calls, we'll be able to get baseline performance a lot faster. And that is really attractive to me, as an ML engineer building a model and saying, okay, I don't need to, think about layers and anything quite yet. I can just go with what's known to be a highly performant model. And then on the data stack side, I think what I do think will change is just, we know that data and the way that it flows through businesses is really crucial to speed and performance nowadays, more so than ever. A lot of the best companies in the world are able to serve data insights in real time. Think about your Ubers, your Googles, your Facebooks, right? They're using data near real time in a lot of cases. And I think these new tools, the new data stack has come out of lessons from those companies, right? And they're taking that same level of data visibility and accessibility and helping other companies access that. And that's going to make machine learning in a lot of new contexts near instantaneous, real time, and much more accessible. And so I think that's exciting to think about. We're just at the beginning of this whole transformation process.
Yeah, sweet. So what about you, David? What have you been up to, man?
Yeah. So for those who don't know, I'm now working at Microsoft. The organization name is long, but I work within the digital transformation platform insights and analytics team. And what my responsibilities are, maybe it might be helpful if I tell you kind of what our goals are, what the OKRs are, and which ones I'm responsible for. So for example, I'm responsible for onboarding all of our ML projects that are in production. So these are models that have already been customer facing in one way or another. Maybe they're actively producing a batch of predictions, or it's a web service. And onboarding these projects to an architecture where we can have CI/CD, have a pull request process in place, have separate environments, dev, PPE or PPE and prod, come up with good documentation that captures what would be important to other people like myself, the data scientists and future engineers that are going to be hired under our team. I'm thinking about coming up with a very smooth on-call process for all of these models that are now in production. And when I mean on-call, I'm talking about now we have a rotation where someone is the directly responsible individual. I think that's what DRI stands for. I always forget. The on-call engineer. It's your turn to be on call. And now that we have models in that, you know, as a part of these services, it's a little bit trickier to troubleshoot and debug if you do not have that machine learning experience. And so one solution is, all right, write docs that have all that information. But it's like, how do you keep that up to date? And so it's like coming up with a process for this at large scale. And when I mean large scale, like we have, you know, multiple models in production now, but over time, we're just going to be adding more and more. And so I'm thinking, you know, it's 5 years from now, what does that look like? How do we have a smooth on-call process? And thinking through what that looks like. And these are what I'm responsible for. And what that looks like is various things. When I first started a little while ago, I came up with an architecture that would capture some of these main components, allow us to be in a position to automate training, automate deployment, have a pull request process. And now I'm in the process of actually implementing that architecture that I put together to various projects. So I've onboarded, let's say, three right now. What that involves is me literally making these code changes, setting it up, getting into production. And a lot of it right now is going to be actually using Azure Machine Learning, which in many ways, I love Qflow, guys. So nothing bad to Qflow, but it's like exactly what I wanted Qflow to be for me when I was building it out at Benevolent. I know the team is doing really well now at Benevolent. I've caught up with some of them. And so nothing bad to say about that, but it works really well. It allows us to do things like put together ML pipelines, which I'm using to orchestrate various of these ML projects. We're also heavily leaning on Azure DevOps, which I guess the equivalent could be GitHub Actions or GitLab CI to allow CI/CD pipelines to automate the testing process, the deployment process, various different things you can automate from there. That's like kind of it, really. It's been really fun. My team is essentially like a startup within Microsoft. So we have that startup feel, but the Microsoft backing. And that's really been really nice because Microsoft has a very mature set of tools and technologies and processes. You know, our on-call process is very robust. Our incident management system is very robust and mature. And so it's been fun, me learning these new things and thinking about how all of that applies to data science. There's that graphic that I think the Metaflow team put out a while ago. It's like a pyramid of like what us data scientists cares about. And I think about that a lot. And I'm trying to, you know, do things that make it easier for the data scientists to get their projects to production. A lot of them work on proof of concepts that they have to iterate quickly. And I don't want them to have to worry about the reliability of the infrastructure. I want it just to work. And I want it to work in such a way where it's hard for them to do the wrong thing. And for anyone who's spoken to me about tooling, I think that that's what good tooling does, is it aims to make it really hard to do the wrong thing and makes it easy to do the right thing. And so as I'm building out these systems and these tools and these processes, that's really what I'm focused on is the cultural side of MLOps, right? The processes, the people side, and how important that is, things like project management, and how that makes your quality of life so much better when you put some thought into that. That's pretty much it.
Dude, there's a lot of stuff there, but tell me an example of how you've done that, where you're forcing someone to do the right thing as opposed to giving them an out and letting them do the wrong thing.
Yeah. So let's say before you release something, let's say you're releasing a web service, you're deploying a new web service. One thing that you could do before you do any sort of release process is have a set of automated tests that run against that component. And that's really basic in software engineering, right? Have tests for this specific module or this component. But if you have that baked in, if you have CI/CD, every time you make a code change, those tests are going to run. So that right there is a good example, because they don't have to manually trigger these tests to run. It automatically runs as a result of them making changes to this particular area. And you're running not all the tests, but maybe those specific set of tests that are relevant to that. You could have something alongside having automated tested. You could have multiple branches. One branch that could serve as your master branch, and you could use this to be essentially like your pre-prod environment. Everything that goes here is essentially in need of validation. If everything works, then you can have a second branch, so say your prod branch, that you merge those changes into only when you know that it's worked in your pre-prod environment. Since you're using source control, you can have a pull request process there. You have a reviewer go and validate those code changes, give approval for them, maybe even require them to attach certain pieces of information that would be useful for anyone looking later to see what if something went wrong. Let's say a new change was introduced, they would be able to reproduce that bug or go back to the original configuration as it was. And these are things that you can easily do using, you know, Azure DevOps or GitLab CI, and just allow your data scientists to work. They make their code changes, they make a pull request, they push it, and then all these things happen in the background without them having to manually do them. And I think that's just one really small, simple example.
Yeah, that makes total sense. There's one thing that came up as you were talking about that, and you were mentioning like rolling things back. And when we had Ewan on the meetup like 2 weeks ago, I think it was, he mentioned just how when you're dealing with machine learning models and when you're dealing with data, how much more tricky it can be to roll things back. And I'm wondering if you guys have any thoughts on that and like how to do that well and gracefully.
Well, one first thing that comes to mind is metadata. Keep track of all the metadata around that, the model versions, the data set versions, the framework versions. Good tooling actually makes it rather, it's a part of it. Like most MLOps stack actually have some sort of like artifact registry where you can register assets within an ML pipeline or a workflow. And it could be everything from an environment to a model itself, a data set, a different things, and have that in such a way where you could version them. There's metadata attached to them, and it shows you exactly where it comes from. And that's, you know, again, if you have things in Git under Git, then you get that benefit there too. If you have the hash, right, that produces this, you can revert back to that if you needed to. But there's many other things I think you could do. Vishnu, what do you think?
I mean, we actually designed a system, a model release system, where we had this thing. You know, we had this issue. We were thinking about, okay, how should we do rollbacks? You know, if our smoke test fails, or if our smoke test fails. And we actually decided to do manual rollbacks. You know, we basically set it up so that, you know, there'd be an alert that would be created. You know, as David said, all the metadata would be provided, you know, what Git hash, you know, what data hash, all the elements that go into that pipeline. And then, you know, the ML engineer would be notified and go check out the situation. And I think, you know, for us, that was really important because, you know, we weren't necessarily dealing with a large scale production environment where, you know, the use case was like completely specced out. It was a more R&D use case where we were learning kind of what kind of data would be, you know, created in production. And I think sometimes that level of engagement and intuition is really important to build as you release systems and models. And I think, you know, overall, to me, some of these process-oriented things, you know, they exist to streamline work and to make it more clear who does what, but they should never really feel like a burden, you know. And they should never feel like something you almost have to do, right? the same thing is the same way that we talked about testing. The same way I think about these rollbacks, which is do what works for you. And as long as you've thought about it, you've probably done a good job. So that's kind of my perspective on rollbacks, testing, et cetera.
Nice. So I think it's also worth us mentioning before we go a little bit about what we're all working on with the community and where our energy is going into, like what's coming up next and what we've been excited about. I know there's really cool stuff that both you, David, and Vishnu are doing, but I'll start just because I want to go first this time. And so I'll mention that the feature store compare page and the monitoring compare page were a pain in the ass to do, but a lot of people said that they found a lot of value in them. And so we're making right now, I'm really close to polishing off and putting up live on the website an experiment tracking compare page with all the different tools that would fall under that category. And it's not only experiment tracking, it's almost, we don't really know how to call it because we have like model store in there, experiment tracking in there, and then we almost want to call it a metadata store, but there's so many stores these days in MLOps that it's like we're going to have a mall by the time we're done with all these damn stores. It's going to be the strip mall, the MLOps strip mall, I think is what we can call it. So that's what
honestly,
I'm super
not
excited
a bad name.
About. What, the MLOps strip mall? Should we explain that right now?
We should change the name of the community to MLOps strip mall.
You heard it here first. So many damn stores. You've got yourself a strip mall. So that's what I'm pretty stoked and where I've been focusing a lot of the time. I mean, aside from doing these podcasts and trying to find interesting people to interview, which, by the way, if anyone has anybody that they want to see on the podcast, reach out to us. Also, I'll just mention this before I hand it over to either of you two. We started doing this thing, which has been really exciting, which is whenever anyone signs up for Slack, there's this bot / program / app, whatever it's called Campfire. And it asks someone as they sign up for Slack a series of questions. And so it's asking people like, what are they working on right now in MLOps? And it's giving us this better idea of what the community is and what the community is looking to accomplish. And one thing I'm super stoked about, which is so small, and I probably should not be so stoked about this, but I love it because it's a way for me to interact more with the community, is that on one of the lines, basically the campfire is like a choose your own adventure. You get to say, oh, I'm working on this. I identify as this. This is what I feel like is the most difficult for me, or here's my tech stack, blah, blah, blah. And one of these lines is you can book out a 15-minute like call with me and just talk to me. And so I get to like meet all these people that I probably never would have met. But the ones who are brave enough, as they're coming into the community, they're booking out a call. And I got to give props to Vishnu on this one because he gave me the idea for it and I'm just executing on it. But I love it because I've met 3 people already. We just started doing this last week and I have 2 more people that booked out time on my calendar. And so it is so cool for me to see what they're working on, see where they are in the world, see what kind of difficulties they're going through. Maybe they want to be somebody that comes and talks on the podcast. And actually the guy that I met today, he was asking like, hey, is there any like patterns or guidebook or how-to book on putting data products into production, putting ML products into production? Feels like there should be like some kind of guide where it's like you need data engineers to do this or you need data scientists to do this. And so we just geeked out on that for the time during the meeting. And that's what I'm also very stoked about. But now I'll hand it over to you, David, because I know you got cool shit that you're doing too.
Yeah, I'll start. We've released a podcast where we interviewed Saji from Pinterest, and it was our kind of like intro into something that I'm working on. It's called the System Design Reviews. And the idea there is that we pick a interesting architecture that we, you know, we think is fun, or maybe state of the art or really complicated, and break it down into the essential elements, things that would be useful to someone preparing for a system design interview. You know, what questions should you ask? What are the pain points that often come up? What are common patterns that you see in these architectures? And yeah, doing that in such a way that it's, you know, it's like the TLDR for all of that information. And then what we do with that is make that even smaller and break it down into an animation. And that's what I'm working on right now. We're working on animating this, me speaking over some cool video with cool visuals. And it's going to be all nerdy, all talking about, you know, MLOps and, you know, distributed systems, and hopefully doing it in a way where it's really interesting. It's succinct, so that, you know, an engineer just wanting to, you know, grow their system design skills can watch that and, you know, be like, oh, cool, that was a nice overview of that. Or for people that are learning how to develop that skill, I think it also would be good for them as well. When you start seeing these systems being built, you do see things that are common across all of them. And that helps you when you have to build your own system. Okay, it should look like this. I need some part that does something like this. Or I know that there's this pattern and it works for this sort of problem. And developing that intuition is something that engineers, I think, struggle with. It's just a skill. Very hard, because you never know exactly what you need for building a system. But it's something that I'm trying to develop myself, and this is my way to do that. It's like the Feynman method, right? The best way to learn something is to teach it or to communicate it. And so we're doing that with this series. We're very excited to be collaborating with lots of different teams and companies. We're even going to be working with different people within the community to help and actually create some of that content. So lots of interesting and exciting things coming up that we are very excited for you guys to see.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked on that too. And if anyone hasn't seen the System Design Review podcast and you want to go really deep into the technical side of things, that is an awesome one to watch. I love that you did it. I am excited to start doing them more, hopefully, because it's like you left me with this urge, you know, like Game of Thrones season just ended and now I got to wait a whole year, or I'm ready for the next one. So I'm stoked. Yeah.
Awesome.
And Vishnu, awesome. What have you been up to, man? I know you're doing a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited. You know, I joined the MLOps community as the head of operations officially, helping keep things running. You know, so to all you listeners out there, if you are, you know, interested in talking about anything, the same way that you should message Demetrios, message me. If there's any way I can help out, something in the community, something off the community, in the MLOps industry in general, always down to chat. So very excited to have formally taken on this role and just kind of helping build out this amazing community into a platform for the entire industry to come together. Additionally, on top of that, we have a lot of great podcasts that are coming up. I think some of the guests, you know, that Demetrios has managed to snab for us this time are really, really cool. We have Chris Albin from the Wikimedia Foundation. Every single data scientist has seen his Pandas tricks on his website. And you know, we have some really interesting hands-on executives at different startups that are going to be joining us to talk about their exploits in the MLOps world. And you know, I think perhaps, you know, maybe most directly related to my work, we're going to be expanding our team. We're going to be adding more volunteers to help out with all the amazing things that this community wants to do. You know, we have a newsletter, we have a blog, we have a podcast, we have a reading group, we have so much more. And we need more hands on deck to help us manage that and grow it even bigger. And so if you're interested in volunteering with us for a couple hours a week and really helping us turn into the preeminent industry organization and community in the MLOps world, please do reach out to me or Demetrios and let us know how you'd like to be involved.
Yeah. And we won't force you to come on the podcast, but if you want to, you can also. It's not a prerequisite, but it is an option, we could say. So guys, this has been awesome. I'm excited for everything that's coming up. I think it's going to be super fun to see what we do from now until the end of the year. I sometimes joke that it's like we've created a monster now that there's over 6,000 people in Slack. And so I know we all think deeply, you know, like, and a year ago, I was stoked if we hit 600 people. And so now it's just like, where are we going from here? You know, and what we all are thinking really deeply about, like, how can we best serve the community? How can we get it what it wants? And how can we make sure that it stays with this? Like, so many times people tell me, and this I'm proud about, right? Like, I'm really proud that the community has such a great vibe, and the people in the community are super polite and they're really willing to help, and you don't get any pretentiousness. And that is something that I think is so awesome. And I know the dangers of growing and losing that spark. So we all think about this quite a bit, and we all talk about it quite a bit. And how can we keep that? How can we preserve that? So that's something that we want to make sure that we're working towards. And that's about it for today. Unless you all have anything else you want to mention. I mean, David's been doing some crypto mining. We could talk about that.
I urgently need to deal with the bee sting on my foot. So
vinegar, I heard, is good.
I am. Oh yeah, I'm gonna go ice it.
All right.
This is my Labor Day crisis that I'm going to deal with.
All right, fellas. Have an awesome Labor Day weekend. And
take care, everyone.
See you next time. I'm glad that we did this. We don't get to catch up like this.
Yeah.
So it's cool.
It was good.
We got to schedule like one of these per quarter. All right.
I have a book recommendation for anyone interested. To Engineer is Human by Henry Petrosky. I don't know if anyone could see it. How did a simple design error cause one of the greatest disasters of the 1980s? The collapse of the walkways at the Kansas City Hyatt Regency Hotel? We'll read this to find out. All right, guys.
Are you getting commissioned? Can we put an Amazon affiliate link for you on that one?
No, I wish. I wish I would get you. That'd be great. Shout out to Mr. Petrosky. Maybe you could, you know, give me a little something for putting this out there. But.
Awesome.
All right, guys.
Take care, everyone.
See you all later.
Peace. Bye-bye.